got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. When I was in college, I used to work part-time at a local radio show introducing the older hits. Although most DJs at the time yelled and screamed their way through the show, I was, on the other hand, a low-key DJ, and I would introduce the song and give a little 15-second or so history of the music. Our theme was another moldy oldie from the Golden Groove Yard. I was therefore introducing songs from the beginnings of rock and roll, such as Bill Haley and the Comets, and others from times past. I bring this up in order to introduce today's topic of molds and their effect on people who live with them, and many of us do, even without our knowledge. I am talking in particular about house molds. So we'll start with a definition of mold. A mold is a hollow container used to give shape to molten or hot liquid material, such as wax or metal, when it cools and hardens. No, not that kind.
I guess that you mean a mold that is a type of fungus that consists of a small organism found almost everywhere. They can be black, white, orange, green, or purple.
So before we continue, we really have to define fungus. Well, a fungus is any one of a group of unicellular, multicellular, or spore-producing organisms that feed on organic matter. Fungi, that's the plural for more than one fungus, includes molds, which we're going to talk about today, as well as yeast, mushrooms, and toadstools.
Outdoors, molds play a very important role. They are certainly not useless in nature. They help break down dead leaves, plants, and trees.
Molds thrive on moisture, and they reproduce by means of tiny, lightweight spores that travel through the air. You're exposed to mold every day.
In small amounts, mold spores are usually harmless. But when they land on a damp spot in your home, they can start to grow. When mold is growing on a surface, spores can be released into the air where they can be easily inhaled.
If you're sensitive to mold and inhale large numbers of spores, you could experience health problems. Studies have shown that people who are sensitive already suffer from allergies, asthma, or compromised immune systems and occupy damp or molding buildings are at an increased risk of health problems such as inflammatory and toxic responses to mold spores, metabolites, and other components.
The most common health problem related to mold is an allergic reaction. But there are other mold-related problems, including respiratory as well as immune system responses. These responses include the respiratory symptoms, respiratory infections, and worsening of asthma symptoms.
Rarely, there's something called hypersensitivity pneumonitis, as well as allergic alveolitis, chronic rhinosinusitis, and allergic fungal sinusitis.
A person's reaction to mold depends on their sensitivity and other health conditions, along with the amount of mold present, the length of exposure to the mold, and the type of mold or mold products.
Then there are the mycotoxins, which are produced by just some molds. Right off the bat, from the name itself, you can imagine its serious complications. The word mycotoxin ends in the syllable or word toxin, which we all probably know to mean a plant or animal poison or venom, especially one produced by microorganisms. Mycotoxins can cause diseases even in low concentrations in the body.
The term toxin mold refers to molds that produce mycotoxins. One such mold is named Sticky Botrys Chatarum.
Exposure to high levels of mycotoxins can lead to neurological problems and, in some cases, death.
Sticky Botrys Chatarum, also known as black mold or tussock black mold is a kind of microfungus that is sometimes found in soil and grain.
But the real problem for humans lies in the fact that this particular mold is often associated with wet gypsum materials and wallpaper. In other words, building materials used in building walls in homes. Maybe your home. But even then, not all strains of S. chatarum produce mycotoxins. And under certain conditions, some of these lose the ability to produce toxins like these over time.
Even intense exposure in the laboratory settings of rats to vapors from walls entirely covered in S. chatarum resulted in few notable biological effects. This may be because the air contained almost no spores. Again, maybe because the walls were not disturbed during the experiment.
Health problems related to this mold have been documented in humans as well as animals since the 1930s. And it may have been responsible for the symptoms that had been misdiagnosed as leprosy in the old biblical times. Nowadays, S. chatarum has been linked with so-called sick building syndrome, SBS.
So sick building syndrome ends up being a medical condition where people in a building suffer from symptoms of illness or feel unwell for no apparent reason.
The symptoms tend to increase in severity with the time that people spend in the building and improve over time or even disappear when people are away from the building.
The main identifying observation is an increased incidence of complaints of symptoms such as headache, eye, nose, and throat irritation, fatigue, and dizziness, as well as nausea.
The causes of sick buildings are frequently due to problems in the construction of the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems, the HVAC systems.
Whereas chatarum has been found, building occupants often complain of symptoms such as sensory irritation of the eyes, nose, or throat, neurotoxic or general health problems, skin irritation, nonspecific hypersensitivity reactions, infectious diseases, as well as changes in odor and taste sensations.
As we said earlier, allergic alveolitis, which is allergic inflammation of the air sacs in the lungs, has been associated with the presence of fungi and bacteria in the moist air of residential houses and even commercial offices.
Whenever there is a possibility that a patient's or patient's symptoms related to sick building syndrome, the more specific cause needs to be ascertained. For example, they may comprise specific diagnosable symptoms caused by certain agents, chemicals, bacteria, as well as fungi, which we have been concentrating on today.
There are usually four causal agents in BRI: immunologic, infectious, toxic, and irritant. Now, one name that you might be more familiar with is the term Legionnaire's disease, caused by a specific bacteria which could be ascertained through clinical findings as the source of contamination within a building.
Although sick building syndrome does not have any known absolute cure, and we will get to some more specific cures that have been tested recently, alleviation of symptoms consists of removing the affected persons from the building associated with non-specific symptoms.
However, in the case of Legionnaire's disease, a particular group of antibiotics has been known to cure the people affected by it. There are some wise things that you can do to prevent the problem in the first place. First, use toxin-absorbing plants. Yes, you heard me right, plants, such as Sansevieria. Now, you may be saying, Dr. Lasky, where do I get that? I can barely pronounce it. Well, we looked it up, and you can get it online, on Amazon, and in many other websites. In fact, there are 21 pages of Sansevieria plants right there in Amazon. Also, you can get them at your local Lowe's and even Walmart stores.
Then we get to roof shingle non-pressure cleaning for removal of algae, mold, and glowiocapsa magma.
Oh no, not another Latin term, glowiocapsa magma. What the hey is that?
Glowiocapsa magma is a species of bacteria which fertilize water, generating oxygen gas.
Well, it's gained notoriety in the southeastern United States. That's where we live, and it has spread since the early 1990s throughout most of the rest of the United States as well as Canada. This particular type of cyanobacteria is responsible for creating those black stains and streaks that you see on roofs. What happens is that the bacteria accumulates over time as it feeds on moisture and calcium carbonate.
This accumulation begins to show the black stains as the cyanobacteria develop their dark and hard UV-protected outer coating. Why is it spreading? Most likely due to the fact that rising humidity and temperatures combined with more and more bacteria force promotes their spread.
Not only that, but fiberglass shingles are made with limestone as a filler. That's the filler in the asphalt. These shingles hold moisture and organic, we'll call it bacterial food material, longer than the paper asphalt shingles that have been made from the early 1980s. The bacteria are airborne. This cyanobacteria causes substantial destruction to roofs, causing shingle decay and loss of reflective power.
Over time, glowiocapsa magma breaks down the shingles by feeding off of the limestone granules embedded in the shingles.
This decreases a roof's ability to reflect ultraviolet rays of light, and it really does shorten the life of your roof.
Once the bacteria have become noticeable, the stains will continue to worsen year after year. As the bacterial colony grows, gravity pulls it downward, resulting in the smear-like stains down roofs.
Most experts within this subject area conclude the bacteria are harmful if left untreated, as the growth of mold and moisture continues within the shingles, and that causes the premature aging, rotting, and granular loss.
So, what can you do about it? Well, the most common and most widely accepted solution is an application of sodium hypochlorite as well as copper sulfate.
The preferred technique of application of these chemicals is just low-pressure washing. No need to get out that really hard pressure washer. This will avoid costly damage to the structure. Many roofs cleaning contractors offer this method of cleaning.
Other preventive measures that you can use to prevent these mold problems are using ozone to eliminate the many sources such as VOC, mold, mildews, bacteria, viruses, and even odors.
Remember to replace water-stained ceiling tiles and carpeting. Use only paints, adhesive solvents, and pesticides in well-ventilated areas, or only using the pollutant sources during periods of non-occupancy. Maintain maintenance of your HVAC systems and use UVC light in the HVAC system itself. Well, it's time for our mid-show break. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with Carmen Lasky, and this is Hey Doc. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I will now continue from the first part of the program with molds that injure us.
So now let's get back to our first nemesis. You remember the Stachybotrys tartarum, also known as black mold or toxic black mold?
Let's talk about possible treatments for this particular mold. The results of clinical studies of the use of topical antifungals has been, well, at best, mixed. Some were treated with intranasal amphotericin B and found improvement in nasal obstruction and treatment, which focused on removing the ongoing sources of oxidative stress in the body, such as the mycotoxins, as well as instituting treatments which focus on countering oxidative stress, like glutathione and other antioxidants, may have been more successful.
Today, the five most common genera of indoor molds are...
Drumroll, please.
Chlorosporium, Penicillium, Aspergillus, Alternaria, and Trichoderma. But those are for another show.
Did you know that a diet rich in red meat may actually interact with your natural gut bacteria to raise the risk of heart disease?
Apparently, according to recent studies, a diet rich in red meat may affect heart disease risk by triggering the production of certain metabolites in the gut.
People who ate red meat as their main source of protein for 1 month had levels of a chemical called trimethylamine N-oxide, or TMAO for short, were 2 to 3 times higher than those in people who got their protein primarily from white meat or non-meat sources.
Gut bacteria produce TMAO as a byproduct when they feed on a certain nutrients during digestion.
And previous studies have implicated high circulating levels of TMAO in the development of artery-blocking plaques and raised the risk of heart-related conditions.
In the recent research, scientists at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio uncovered 2 mechanisms through which a diet rich in red meat raises TMAO levels.
First, as we said, it appears that not only does frequent consumption of red meat enhance gut bacteria production of TMAO, but it also reduces elimination of the compound through the kidneys. Now, TMAO appears to modify calcium signaling in blood platelets. In addition, it shows that platelets respond differently to blood clotting triggers when blood levels of TMAO are high.
Also, the research team proposed that the compound could be a powerful predictor of the risk of heart attack, stroke, and death, even when cholesterol and blood pressure levels are healthy.
The recent study assigned 113 individuals to follow 3 tightly controlled diets in a random order for 4 weeks each, with what they call a washout diet, preceding the changeover. The diets differed according to the main source of protein. In the red meat diet, 12% of the daily calories came from lean red meat in the form of pork or beef, while in the white meat diet, these calories came from lean white poultry meat.
In the non-meat diet, 12% of the daily calorie intake came from legumes, nuts, grains, and isoflavone-free soy products.
In all 3 diets, protein accounted for 25%. That's 1/4 of the daily calories. And the remaining 13% of the protein came from eggs, dairy, and vegetable sources.
After 4 weeks on the red meat diet, the majority of the individuals had raised levels of TMAO in their blood and urine.
On average, compared with levels during the white meat and non-meat diets, blood levels of TMAO during the red meat diet were up to 3 times higher. For some individuals, the levels were even 10 times higher. And the urine samples, well, they revealed a similar pattern.
This study also yielded a very unexpected result. While on the red meat diet, the study participants' kidneys were less efficient at expelling TMAO.
However, in the 4 weeks after ceasing the red meat diet, their blood and urine levels of TMAO fell.
So it appears that people can reduce the risk of heart-related problems by changing what they eat.
Gut production of TMAO was lower and kidney elimination was higher when the individuals followed the white meat or the non-meat protein diet. Do you know the difference between a stroke and a heart attack? This could be the difference in saving a loved one if you do know.
Heart attacks and strokes are life-threatening medical emergencies. They are very different medical conditions.
The quicker a person recognizes a heart attack or stroke, the better the chances of survival and a full recovery. So let's start with the heart attack.
Chest pain is a common sign of heart attack, but not all heart attacks involve chest pain. A heart attack, also called a myocardial infarction, or MI, happens when a problem somewhere in the body reduces or blocks blood flow to a coronary artery. The coronary arteries supply the heart itself with blood.
That's right. The heart doesn't directly get its blood from the flow through the heart itself, that is, through the atria and ventricles. First, the blood has to pass through the smaller coronary arteries to the tissues of the heart itself. These coronary arteries can themselves become narrow if substances such as fat and cholesterol build up.
This is called plaque, which can build up over years. If a piece of this plaque breaks off in a heart artery, a blood clot can form around it. This can stop the normal flow from reaching the heart muscle.
In other words, the clot blocks the flow of blood in the coronary artery to the heart muscle that it normally supplies. If this happens, part of the heart muscle does not get enough oxygen. This part begins to die if the blockage does not receive treatment quickly.
Scar tissue begins to replace healthy heart tissue. When there is damage or death to the heart muscle due to lack of oxygen and nutrients, a heart attack can result.
You know, a heart attack occurs every 40 seconds in the U.S. alone. Well, now let's get to a stroke. What is a stroke? A stroke occurs when low blood supply to the brain stops the brain tissue from receiving oxygen and its other essential nutrients. It can happen when a blood vessel that carries oxygen and nutrients to the brain bursts, or like the coronary arteries, is blocked by a clot.
Any brain cells that do not receive oxygen begin to die. This happens within minutes. If someone is lucky, they may just have a temporary clot which leads to something called a transient ischemic attack or a mini stroke.
Another cause of a brain stroke may be a brain aneurysm, which is a bulge in an artery that can burst. It too can lead to stroke.
The symptoms of a stroke and an aneurysm can be similar, but they may require different treatment. So let's talk about symptoms.
A heart attack and a stroke can have similar symptoms. What is important here are the differences so that you can differentiate the cause, be it heart or brain. In both cases, though, urgent medical treatment is necessary.
Heart attack symptoms include chest pain or discomfort, upper body discomfort, pain that radiates down the left arm. You have probably heard that one before. Shortness of breath, cold sweat, tiredness, nausea, and lightheadedness or dizziness.
Remember, though, that the symptoms are not carved in stone. Symptoms can vary between individuals. Some people actually have no symptoms or very mild symptoms and experience what sometimes called a silent heart attack. And remember that not all heart attacks involve chest pain, even if discomfort is present. There may be just a feeling of pressure in the chest. We need to mention some variances in the sexes.
The most common symptoms in women can be different from those in men. Women may be more likely to experience sudden weakness, shortness of breath, body aches, sleep problems, and overall feeling of being unwell, nausea, vomiting, and indigestion, as well as jaw pain.
If there are any suggestions of a possible heart attack, call 911. The person may need immediate medical attention. Stroke symptoms are often different. For example, a severe headache can be a sign of a stroke.
And the stroke symptoms depend on the part of the brain where damage occurs. The damage can affect a number of functions, including memory, speech, and muscle control.
These symptoms include, and remember again that it depends on the part of the brain that is affected, sudden numbness or weakness in the face, arms, or legs, usually one side of the body, confusion or difficulty speaking or understanding speech, sudden difficulty walking, dizziness, or loss of balance or coordination, as a matter of fact, even trouble seeing in one or both eyes, severe sudden headache, which may also include vomiting, dizziness, or altered consciousness. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.